because it may not necessarily be your child.
Okay.
It's slightly different in the sense that in this case, it's not necessarily your child, but somebody trying to look after this child and trying to apply for a grant. And now you are saying, I'm going to take into account the...
And now you don't only want to take the income of this person is not even the parent of the child, but also his or her son. Alright. Okay.
This matter should still be before the court, and we will still be filing our papers. It just emanated very recently.
Look, what is the position? Is that somebody's income is got to be taken into account with the tax issue that or is it the other way around?
Yes, Chair, it's the fact that we want to take in the first part in the administration of the grant, we have want to take, like, let's say for example, a married woman wants to apply for a grant in respect of her child, who is not her child.
Her husband's
income would also be taken into account.
Maybe I can just also explain this. The Land Committee often inquiry into the child support grant or social security for children back in, I think it was 1996, it recommended that that household income as opposed to the applicant's income should be taken into account and in the computation of the living tax. And there hasn't been reservations already then about whether it would be fair to take all the income of all the people who happen to share a common household in which this child for whom a grant is being applied for are living together. So I don't know what then happened to consequence to the initial set of regulations, because the argument then was that the aim is to target children in poor households, so household income bracket. So I suppose indirectly this challenges that policy position. I don't know if it was ever narrowed down to where the household essentially consists of married couples, that the income of the couple would be the one that's taken into account. But I suppose that is the issue that we're going to call. Did you want to say something? Okay. Please proceed.
Okay. May I just, I just thought that I'd look quickly at the regulations. There was a time at which point people felt concerned about this sort of just the designation of a parent. Remember, it was parent, the parent. And that parent was always construed as, if you wish, the collector. Any one of the two's income. It's since then, in 2001 already, we moved to the caregiver to provide for any other member of the family to be the caregiver, and therefore that the income of the caregiver was subsequently taken into account, and that's what the regulations
so
also
that was
said.
Already decided in the 1996
formulation
position.
Okay.
The very core that underpins the concept of the child support grant, as distinct to its predecessor, which was the maintenance grant, was that unlike the maintenance grant, which was a grant for a parent, and in fact before it used to be called a single care grant, it was for single mothers who are widowed or divorced, etc., it moved to a parent who would qualify for not more than two children. All right. Now that was replaced. That's the arbitrary one which exceeded other race groups in its application and only third-rate groups accepted. now. It was replaced by this one, which said that the grant is now available to the primary caregiver. So the whole existence of the child support grant pivoted around the new concept of the primary caregiver, which did not exist in our family law system before, hitherto. And the concept meant that it did not matter what the biological relationship between the child and the person caring for the child was. In fact, around that same time, there was a court judgment determining what custody meant. And that judgment said, if my memory serves me well, that custody is a factual and not necessarily a legal question. That if a person is actually looking after the child, then that person has legal custody. It doesn't matter whether he is legally entitled to have custody of the child. So it coincided neatly with the concept of the primary caregiver, which simply said we're not looking at whether you have legal rights to the child. We're only interested in finding out whether, in fact, you are the person who's looking after the child. Mm-hmm. So that if the mother goes and lives elsewhere and leaves the child with the granny or the aunt and is outside of the picture, we're not necessarily just going to pay to the mother simply because she's the biological parent, even if she has absolutely no responsibility over the child and the granny or the aunt is the one that's looking after the child. And it was also aimed at relieving grannies from having to use their grants, their old age grants, to look after other people's children without assistance from the state. But that's then. I don't know what the position now is, and I stand to be educated further. But that you can proceed, and if there's further clarity as to what the position is or what the is before the court, you can add further.
Captain, can one just step in?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
That thing of grannies using their old age, Captain, let me link it to this one of saying, I've got grandchildren, and I'm what I am. If it happens that my daughter dies, leaving these orphans behind, do they qualify for grants or not? That's my first question. The second one is, if my daughter is alive, has got children, but she got children at a young age, in as much as that, I am bound to take her back to school. Doesn't her children qualify for a grant? Thank you.
I think they can explain the status quo, but as far as I am aware, if you are looking after those children, you would be the primary caregiver, so you would pass that first test. The second test would be whether you qualify in terms of the unit test as the primary caregiver of the child. And that's where your income would then be taken into account, or the income of the household. I don't know what the legal position now is with the regulations that we have. But that's how I would understand it. But they can amplify it in terms of the existing arrangement.
Yeah, Chairperson, you know where my argument comes from?
Yeah.
My argument comes from saying the child is not mine. Nor have I adopted the child legally.
Yes.
I'm just helping somebody
else.
That's
true. That's correct.
The mother of the child.
That's correct.
In order to ease the burden of the government, now she must also get a grant for not working. She must go to school so that she must continue to go to work. Now, why am I denied? Why are the children, not me, those little children, why are they denied their rights as children?
They are not. You are, as the granny, entitled by virtue of being the primary caregiver, not the parent necessarily. By virtue of being the primary caregiver, in law, you are entitled to apply for the grant directly yourself and to get the grant yourself, not necessarily the mother, because you are the one that actually looking after those children, not your daughter.
So So now those children will be punished because Makuma gave an MP, she's getting enough money. That is not there.
Oh,
that is
so
not
that
money.
Is the issue.
That is my argument.
So you're asking whether it's justified to apply an interest in respect of somebody other than the parent. The parent.
Legally not.
This is Mrs. Jackson, she's an MP. She's her grandchildren staying with her because the mother.
No, I'm saying you are not the parent of the children, but you are the primary caregiver.
So are those children entitled, are not entitled to a grant just because
you are earning above a certain income? That's your question. Just because you are earning above it. That is the question. Yeah, I think your question is clear. They'll respond to it. All right. Okay, and that possibly they'll also respond in relation to the new regulations that are being proposed. Some of these issues arise, and the regulations hopefully will seize the opportunity to clarify policy insofar as some of these issues are concerned going forward. But all right, those are the questions. Along the way, as you're presenting, you may want to respond. otherwise, when the line function presents the regulation, maybe they'll deal with some of these policy issues at that stage, whichever way. But the floor is back to you.
Thanks, Chair, for rescuing me. I will deal with that aspect later. The last matter that I wanted to deal with, Chair, is the matter of Cedric Goliath. Now, this matter deals with, you know, the current regulations provide that if a person who is a recipient of social assistance is admitted into a state institution, after a certain period of time, the social assistance will lapse. Now, in this matter, the applicant had FCRTB and they were then admitted into a state institution. After the passage of a certain time, the social grants that they were being provided with were stopped. Now, their argument is that stopping the social grant is unconstitutional because they did not voluntarily go into those state institutions. And therefore, they should not take the blame for having been there, and their grants should not be stopped. Initially, the department was not cited as a party, and we made an application for the department to be cited as a party. And we are busy drafting our paper.
As I understand it, if you are in an institution, a certain small percentage of your grant, you are able to receive a certain small percentage of the grant, but the bulk of the grant gets stopped. The state institution that's funded, where your maintenance in that institution is funded by the state. Because you have this other thing called capitation grant, where if a person is admitted in an institution, the state actually contributes to their upkeep in that institution. So I think that was the rationale. But all right, so that is the matter before the court. All right. Now, members, all right, let me say, he's just finished his presentation anyway. Maybe I'm going to cite you as the first person to ask this question. Follow up directly on this question.
Yeah, it's direct and also related to the regulation. Maybe they can answer it.
Maybe what we need to do is just, the DDG wants to add anything.
Yes.
And then I'm going to take me some Congo as the first person to ask the question. And open it for questions. It's 4:05. I'm told we only entitled to one tea, which we already had. If there's still some coffee outside, that's cool. People can individually go and grab a cup. But we're scheduled to meet until 5:00. Hopefully we'll still find time to go into the regulation. So I'm very worried about us getting to that point. Yes, Chief Director, sir?
No, Chair, I think maybe I made a mistake by saying my last letter. Remember, at the beginning I said I'm dealing with general litigation and litigation related to...
Oh.
So I was finalizing the last part of, the fifth part of my presentation.
All right. Now, it does... Okay. How many cases do you have still on the list?
No, I've done with all the general matters, but I wanted to deal with the matters relating to it.
Okay,
so that's considered a piece.
All right. Okay, please.
I'm sorry, Chair.
Yeah.
Maybe just, you know, for your benefit, I'm sure you're aware that the Chief Director joined the department not so long ago, but I thought I should just, for the benefit of the Chief Director and the members, clear up two issues. And that is that the Scalabrini matter has actually been resolved.
What
this is the,
to do with?
The refugees.
Right.
The colleague indicated earlier on that...
How has it been resolved?
Well, there was essentially an out-of-court settlement of it. There was a calculation done on the potential fiscal implications. The matter went to Cabinet, and Cabinet, at least we went with two proposals to Cabinet between Treasury ourselves and Home Affairs, the one proposing that the refugees be provided with a share of the benefit, at least up to 75%. International law provides for such an arrangement in terms of the United Nations, that is the refugee. But Cabinet felt, because those refugees having been given the status would be in, or rather, it wouldn't make sense to give them half a benefit, because if they are going to be entitled to school and housing, then we can't give them half the benefit of a house. So in terms of government's position, it was give them the benefit. So to that extent, the matter is resolved. There's been a policy decision. The refugees will get the benefit. I think what is outstanding is the provision for that within the regulations. I thought I just needed to clear that up for the benefit of the colleague. The other one on the last matter.
Do we have a general law that regulates a social benefit for refugees?
Yeah.
Over and above.
The Social Assistance Act. The Social Assistance Act provides that the minister shall make available grants to citizens and people or designated groups designated by the minister.
Mm.
Now, the Constitutional Court, you will recall, ruled that permanent residents should be included in this.
Mm.
The argument is that the refugees, given that they are in terms of the Refugee Act provided with certain rights, they too should be considered to be part of a designated group. In fact, the fact that South Africa grants them refugee status, the country in a sense, well, maybe not in a sense, I'm not a legal man, so I may not be using the right words, but government in essence takes up with that the obligation to provide for refugees. So on that basis, the decision was made not to oppose the matter.
I'll just add that to my memory also, designated groups was also meant to provide for the possibility for us to comply with our international agreements,
mm-hmm.
such as a bilateral agreement
mm-hmm.
That was signed upon the coming into upon the independence of Namibia,
mm-hmm.
in terms of which the citizens of Afrika Bay at the time
mm-hmm.
who were entitled to certain
mm-hmm.
receiving them would continue to receive them beyond the independence. And I know that there used to be arrangements whereby, I'm not sure whether it was the government of the Western Cape at the time, who used to act on behalf of government to implement that agreement.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one situation where that flexibility needed to be created back then. But I don't know what the situation is. But yes, please proceed.
Mm. On the final matter presented by the chief director, I think it presents in an interesting case. At the heart of the argument is not so much that the beneficiary has lost the benefit, because as you correctly argue, that if a person stays in a state institution, his basic needs are attended to, basically in terms of shelter, food, etc. The capitation arrangement, I might add, is another instance where, for especially elderly people, live in subsidized homes, and they therefore get a share of it. But in the case of people in institutions fully subsidized by the state, such as a hospital or prison, the benefit falls away. What is being argued in this case is that the state, by taking away the benefit of this XDR, extreme drug resistant patient, is denying his family income support. And I think that is an interesting element of the court, because what should be argued, and I guess when the papers come to the line function, is that the disability benefit is essentially for the disabled person and not targeted at his or her family. Of course, one could argue in terms of the Constitution that social assistance should be provided for the person and his or her dependents. But essentially, the benefit as it's designed is for the disabled person. So I think that the case itself will bring up some very interesting issues. Not legally speaking, layman's language.
It will have an impact on your development of your comprehensive social security system.
Very interesting.
All right. Before I take follow-ups, have you concluded the additions that
yes,
you wanted
yes,
to make?
Yes, okay.
All right. Okay, first I have Mr. Mkongi, and then I'll have Magomede and Maki. And remember, we still have to finish the presentation and then go to regulation.
Mm.
So,
I'm trying to
and the regulations are also pretty urgent for us to get to know what's happening. So we may need to create another time for it. But yes, who do I start with? Ms. Mkongi, yes.
No, thank you very much. I think the last issue is one that is interesting. Because I wanted to ask the question in relation to people who are HIV positive, and they could also relate to the regulations and how do we deal with it. Where you find the question of the CD4 counts going up and down, and people sometimes they go into the grant and after that they go out of the grant. You know, so how do we deal with that situation? You know, and it can come also to court at the end of the day, and how I was supposed to prepare ourselves in doing that. So that is why it's similar to the question of the law and also to the regulation.
Yeah, all right. I think I'll let him answer that one directly. But hopefully when they present on the regulations, we'll get to know how they fit to play with some of the new policy challenges that you mentioned. Ms. Dagmar? Oh, no. This is Magomede first. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Well, Chair, we're asking these questions because we live with them every day. But sometimes when we face conclusions, regulations, and acts and everything, we are in the social development. And we think only of us social development. Like the theme of refugees, it gives me a problem. Because it won't just end up here in the social development. It goes to the housing, it goes to education, it goes to health. You know.
In fact, that was the question that I put forward.
It puts other departments in a predicament. That is why we've got so many backlogs. Really. So when we do this thing, we mustn't just think in this little house, in this little room. Let's take it broad and see the impact that is going to cause for the country. Nina, really, I'm afraid this country is going to be Zimbabwe number 2 if we are not careful. more especially with this grant. Let me read the chairperson.
Well, I suppose they took it to cabinet and that central level.
I
hear your point. I think you're relevant. The point that you are making is very relevant. So I'm not in any way discouraging you from being. I'm just saying that the interesting thing is that they went to cabinet where all these other departments are represented, and then cabinet, as the report, decided to come to some kind of arrangement, as opposed to letting them go to court. So it's interesting. That's why I asked you the question earlier. Is this only in relation to grants, or do we have another mechanism that deals more broadly with the issue of access to social services by these people? And that would include the list of issues that you are raising. So what you are raising now is very critical. But let me allow you to ask the other question.
Yeah, now, Chairperson, the other thing, this thing of social grants, it seems a lot of time we say, just because we are always in a hurry, we fail to outline some other issues so that the department can be able to can see the danger that we are heading. Maybe because, one, I've got a son, I'm an MP. You can see why we contradict things. I'm an MP, I've got a son. Then my son gets a child with Semple's child. The department doesn't consider my son as having enough money at home. They only consider the daughter because the child is with her. You see? They don't look at both sides. They don't look at... let us not be lazy to think people, really, with due respect. One, my daughter, I'm making examples. My daughter has got a child with Chief Moramoche's son. Chief Moramoche is a rich man in Limpopo, very rich, owning plantations of sugarcane and plantations of bananas and plantations of whatever. The department, we are not going to look at where that boy comes from. Mm. We only say he's not working. But with the daughter, because the child is here with me. Really, let us think otherwise. This thing of grants is not fair at all. There is no fairness in it. The other one is, I've got a daughter who comes to Cape Town to look for a job. Then she finds a Nigerian or a Zimbabwean, then she gets pregnant. Okay? She's unable to trace the father of the child because now the father, on seeing that now there is responsibility, he decides to run away to Johannesburg or wherever around the country because he is not registered anyway. When this lady goes for application for a grant, then the people there, the office will say, Sifunima Womta. That is what is happening. Now comes this one.
Sorry, member. I didn't understand the vernacular there. Can you translate?
The father of the child. I guess pregnant by a Nigerian. Okay? Then on seeing that things are now bad, the Nigerian decides to disappear from me. Then when I go for a grant, they want to know where's the father of the child. They want the ID for the father. They want everything. You see? And those things are not in black and white in this thing. Two, it will be that my daughter is very, very naughty. She comes home with a small child like this one. After 3 weeks, she dodges me with the child. Back again, I don't know where in South Africa or where in the world. When I go to ask, very poor old granny goes to ask for a grant, they want that child. They want the mother of the child. Where do I get the mother of the child? Because I can't even see anymore in my eyes. I'm an old woman who can hardly walk to the bus stop. You see, people, really, Tina MPs, we are carrying heavy burdens on our shoulders because people are coming to us to us. We still have him. And this is typically what is happening at the offices. Why we've got to be at the offices every day fighting? In as much as that we are no more, you know, we are notorious now. And please, when just they see your car, they begin to draw the curtains and say, let me get a look at you. It's what is happening. Because I'll be pulling sample with the hand, coming to fight for all what I'm saying here. And now there, I use my petrol, I use my car, and our offices are far because we are staying in the rural areas, and the roads are bad. Now the last one, Chairperson, is that one, no, of the father of the... No, I think it's fine. I think I'm fine for now. No, let me say I'm fine there.
Yeah, no, I'm saying we just didn't say.
Yeah, the department must think before doing things, really.
Especially female officials.
Say hello, that's it.
You're getting it from both
sides. I'm not on the ACR situation. Because obviously it's critical to the health of this nation, and it's a life and death situation that those people are in quarantine. And we can't afford to have any excuses for them not to be. It's hard enough as it is trying to explain to people, convince people that it's in everybody's interest for them to spend that time away. And when you cut off some sort of money, whether they perceive it to be going to their family or it actually doesn't matter, where it's the perception, it's another thing that's making it an impossibility for us to keep those people where they should be. And really, it's not just their life and death situation for them, it's all of us who are actually vulnerable. If we don't have. So I think that for me is just a very important one, and perhaps an exception where we need to make sure that we don't give an extra reason for people not to comply.
And I'm just concerned about time. Obviously we won't go to the regulations today, but two, there's still a lot of issues arising out of litigation in relation to provinces, where there's still a lot of ground to be covered. Now, I'm just wondering whether we shouldn't have this one round responded to briefly and allow the department to conclude their presentation on the other outstanding matters related to litigation, so that at least we know when we come back, at least we are done with the litigation and go through. Because a lot of the issues will find answers in the way in which the department seeks to respond through the new set of regulations. So at least let's understand what the issue is coming through the court. Just respond to all the issues. Is it an urgent matter that the social want to raise in relation to
Chairperson. Thank you, my lord. Chairperson, I just want to add to the sentiments raised by Mokumete and that with regard to what is happening on the ground. Chairperson, people who are doing inspection in local, they understand the sentiments raised by Magumedre, because all the regulations where children are supposed to get grants are affecting women particularly. You remember, Chairperson, when we as Portfolio Committee support the Eastern Cape model, is one of the reasons why when social development is discharging its duty, you go to Limpopo in Sekhukhuneland, where I come from. Here is the official who understands the area. When Magumede come as the grandparent with the child, with his daughter's child, they don't ask Mazgumete to bring the mother and the father of that child. They understand what is happening on the ground. And they rely on traditional leaders to confirm whether Mazgumete indeed is staying with his grandchildren. They process the application without any scruples. You go to Mpumalanga, you find the different story. You go to Gauteng, where they are specializing in bribery. If you have money, they process. If you don't have money, they don't process. You remember, Chairperson, we recommended to the department to say, Department, I'm happy now that the department has the power to formulate the regulation which will regulate all the provinces equally. I hope they are going to take the sentiments raised by members, because this is what is happening on the ground. We are not speculating. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right.
Okay. Let the department respond to the issues raised, and then go straight into the
Chief. Perhaps, you know, in my mind, maybe we shouldn't respond to because it's not quite questions, it's issues raised. I made the remark the other day to one of the colleagues that whoever drafted the Social Assistance Act actually had very little knowledge of the country in its entirety and its demographics and its socioeconomic circumstances. The Social Assistance Act was typically from a perspective of a developed world environment, or white South Africa, as it was then. Everyone was employed, and those vulnerable constituted elderly weren't able to save, which were in the minority, the same with disability, and the same with the child maintenance grant. And we haven't changed much of it, other than to allow the vulnerable people of the entire South Africa to come into that framework. Our real global challenge is not necessarily some chronic diseases, for example, such as HIV and AIDS, or diabetes, or XDR. The real challenge is the level of poverty, because that is, to a great extent, what we need to attend to, and that government has been working towards through various policy measures. The social security system should have provided for the few, but the vulnerable in South Africa is not the few, it's a great majority. And the challenge around providing for benefits to people who have chronic illnesses is that today it may be HIV and AIDS, and tomorrow it's XDR and MXDR and multiple sclerosis. And so it's a challenge around, in fact, it's risky to provide for people grants on the basis of a disease, because who do you include and who do you exclude? But what is missing really here is a comprehensive social security. And that would deal with, I'm quite perplexed by the questions asked by the member, but rather than trying to give an answer as to what is it that we think when we make these policies and think of pregnant young women, etc., etc., maybe I should appeal, Chair, that we should have a session, because the legislature itself should be involved in either on its own at looking at policies or collectively with us, and then we say, what are the range of challenges that we have, and how do we together think around policy, other than to come for one or two sessions and, you know, I feel embarrassed, I feel I'm getting a hiding. But back in the office, we face tremendous challenges in trying to not only expand the social safety net, but how do you develop policies that are sustainable, that helps, etc., etc. So that would be my response, Chair. A session where we sit through it and think around how do we respond to these policy challenges. Thank you.
No, you bra.
No. Let me just moderate here. I think that I said earlier that we're going to have a session where we're going to talk about where we are in terms of developing comprehensive education. We know that as a nation, that is a message that we've committed to work towards. The department working with Treasury, the lead department in terms of developing and perfecting the country's overarching policy framework to deal with this matter. So we will hopefully find some slot at an appropriate time where we'll call you back to come and update as to where we are in the country. And then we can engage on the policy issues in this regard in a much more elaborate way. But I really do feel that we need to conclude the update on the litigation situation. And then, in any case, some of those things will be picked up again when we deal with regulations when you come back again. We'll have to find a slot somewhere in the program of the committee where we can come back to the regulation, because they link very much to some of the issues that are contained in the bill that we've just passed, such as the issue of the age of qualification for the child support grant, the issue of a mentor. But on that note, shall we allow the chief director to conclude his presentation on the other aspects of the litigation?
Thank you, Chair. I'm now moving to matters that relate to failure to consider appeals and also failure by SASSA to process application for social assistance or maybe to make a decision. Now, I must say right from the onset, Chair, that in respect of these matters, it's extremely difficult to get accurate figures. And the figures that I'm going to give here are the figures that, to the best of my knowledge, are very close to the actual figures that you would have preferred to have. Now, in the Eastern Cape, currently we've got 589 matters. In the Free State, it's 812. Gauteng, they've got 25 matters. I'm not sure whether it's related to bribes. So I said I'm not sure, Chair. The KwaZulu-Natal has got plus minus 4,000. Limpopo 1,737. Mpumalanga 58. The Northwest has got 812. The Northern Cape 388. And the Free State, we do not have any figures available. In total, it's about 8,400. Chair, we are still in the process of trying to see whether we cannot get a better system of recording these letters.
How many of those are against the national as opposed to the provincial as opposed to SASSA?
Addition to that,
Chairperson? All
right. I want to add, the citizens said these backlogs are 45,000.
In a judgment, I can't remember which one, they said between 2000 and 2005 or 2006, there were about 8,000 matters that came before the court in the Durban and Maritzburg courts alone. So that would suggest that all those matters, that we've actually seen a significant scaling down of the litigation. Because if it's just one province having 25,000, 6,000, but yeah,
so I think there's a confusion between cases where people have, not cases, but where people have made applications for their appeals to be considered by the tribunal. And I think that this is the number, maybe that could be attributed, that figure could be attributable to such applications.
But what the court judge, the judge in that decision said, that matters that have been brought before the Durban and the Maritzburg Court, Supreme Court, between 2000 and 2005 or 2006, were in the region of 26,000. That's what the judge says about the two courts. So I'm just referring to a judgment for an election settlement. But, yeah, all right. Ms. Maluka wants to add something before you proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to comment on the generalization, as it were, and I think the kind of liberal way in which these statistics are being used. I think 47,000 or anything from 45,000 largely is what we refer to as appeals backlog. These are appeals that have been lodged and either directly through letters to the minister or via the previous MEC offices, but the escalation from whichever point of entry would, it's an estimation. We have embarked on a process to set up a common registry or a standardized registry. We're in the process of capturing all of those applications now. Now, I think in by June, July, we should be able to give accurate statistics because that's the very system that SASSA is now using to keep their statistical records of the number of applicants per month, per week, etc. So we're working on that kind of system. Also, the system that would link the tribunal directly to the registry of SASSA. So we're able to do a quick documentation reconciliation. But that is in response to the 45 or 47,000. It's a backlog, a huge backlog, we understand. And also consistent with the number, total number of beneficiaries, I think, Mr. Chihoma, KZN is one of the highest provinces in terms of the total number of beneficiaries. Now, that's consistent that if you have 12 million, a higher percentage of appellants would be coming from KZN. And the trend that we've done an analysis is that it will follow through the next province, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, but that's based on the total number of beneficiaries. And I think that's also something that we are looking at quite, say, whenever we deploy resources, we need to be consistent with that kind of trend. But for KZN in particular, Chair, I think in the presentation, I've alluded to the fact that we are piloting the tribunal in terms of the adjudication function in KZN specifically because of the high numbers, but also because of some kind of provincial dynamics that are there. We on record know that the number of litigations at this stage that have been lodged through the high courts, working with the state attorney there, it's 4,000 that we're working on. And at this point in time, we have done a pre-adjudication out of the 4,000 of 2,000 of those. Now, obviously, there could be other matters on the periphery, but I'm talking about those that we can reconcile the IDs from the state attorney's office, and we've done a reconciliation already with SASSA, and we are able to say this is a database of 4,000. An update will be forwarded if that the status quo changes, but that's what we know. And we have embarked on a similar process to confirm or validate statistics in other provinces. So I think my colleague is not completely wrong, but it's simply a question of how do you validate the kind of information that you have and with whom. So we've chosen to work with, firstly, and as a priority, the state attorneys, and secondly, we reconcile with data with SASSA through their data registry. Thanks, Chair.
All right, thank you for that clarification. Can you proceed with the rest of your presentation?
Okay, Chair. I think yesterday you asked what is the department is doing to try and arrest this escalation of litigation. About 2 weeks ago, I arranged a workshop in Bloemfontein with all the legal advisors of SASSA National and Provinces and National Department of Social Development and Provinces, where we set out to come up with a strategy. We've already drafted the strategy. But our strategy centers around the directives which were given in cases and in the Gwele judgment. Basically, that judgment tried to encourage litigants not to go to court before trying to resolve matters internally. And in our strategy, we are trying to emphasize that And the judgment also indicated that we need to speedily respond to letters of demand. And we have already started that process of responding to letters of demand so that we can resolve matters where there's no need for us to go to court and say, okay, fine, your appeal is going to be considered for such and such a date. And we provide them with the date, and we, in fact, on that day, do something with their appeal, then we should be able to stem the escalation in the number of cases that the department is facing. But we've also thought that we need to communicate regularly as legal advisors of all of FASA and the national department, including even provinces, where we share the information, because there are instances where, you know, FASA would be cited when in fact the national department should have been cited, and the matter goes to court without us knowing about it, and at the end we have to pay the cost. Now we've decided that we need to exchange information on a regular basis, and we are meeting with the legal advisors of FASA National Office on a weekly basis to update our solution and finalize the strategy. But it's also undertaking to communicate regularly with all the offices of the state attorneys, even in terms of our strategy, so that if there are the issues that may have to be dealt with the office of the state attorney, they then attend to those matters speedily. But with regard to the directives that were given in the credit judgment in KwaZulu-Natal, we've also initiated a process of procuring similar directives throughout all the divisions of the High Court of South Africa, so that people do not resort to litigation without having tried to resolve matters within the department. Because in that case, we save a substantial amount of money. What we've also realized is that actually all these matters that go to court, the beneficiaries tend to gain nothing other than the attorneys. Most attorneys gain a lot of money out of just being paid costs for litigation. Then after that, nothing happens other than that they then take the matter to court again for contempt application, and the beneficiaries would get nothing. So we have also initiated a process of working very closely with Ms. Maloka, because in our responses, we need to get information from her, and we started that process, so that you are able to provide the Office of the State Attorney responses to notices, so that applicants do not unnecessarily go to court on the matter. Thank you, Chair.
Does that complete the balance of your presentation?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
All right. Ms. Maloka or the DPG, do you want to add to the report, Ms. Botanic?
No, Che. I think the Chief Director has covered all the issues. I think what we can say is we look forward to the next engagement. Mm-hmm. Che will recall, and that's probably why I've seen some frustration, only some, is that the committee in its constitution has changed somewhat, and it's been quite a while since Social Security has been called before the committee. So we look forward to the next engagement, Che. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair. I think I just want to, if I may, recontextualize again the issue of litigation. That much as this has a very direct legal bearing, but also this has been quite a kind of a transitional process management, in that most of the administrative issues, simple acknowledgement of an application, would have been during the process where the transition in terms of the establishment of SASA. Now, I'm making reference to that in particular to say it's not only a question of policy or in terms of administrative fairness, but that has been a process of transition of a change in the governance of the social assistance. Largely, the process that was supposed to be followed was Section 23 of the Social Assistance Act would have said that all assets and liabilities, including litigations, would have been dealt with in a particular manner. And I'm aware of that process, although it's not necessarily legal, but it's through the office of the CFO that there has been a conduct now, an audit of all these kind of issues, where we've got to be able to conclude on the process of transition in terms of saying reconciling where we are at, so that the legal services chief director could then commence on an understanding that the transitional issues in terms of the change of legislation are over. Now, what are we dealing with as new litigation issues, and what is the new trend that we see coming? But if we do not get to a stage where we conclude the transition, there's a permeation of carry-through effects of what would have been, and that's why the cases and MECs are being cited, subsequently SASA is being cited, and the National Department, that is an epitome of this transition and functional shift kind of management. I just thought I should bring it into context that while we discuss and we look at these numbers, we, from a process management perspective, believe that we've got to get to a stage where we've concluded on the figures, we've assigned the cumulative figures, and we are able to can sign off that kind of agreement that has, as the Act has stated, that tends to conclude a particular period and era of governance of social assistance and take us into the new. And then we are able to introduce new strategies.
We have no control of litigants who may choose to initiate litigation against either of the spheres of government or SASA for that matter. And it's just up to us to see how we make sure at national that we are in. We're on the ball so far as the situation, irrespective of where it emerges or where the litigation is targeted at, so that at the national level we're able, especially in the light of the decision of the court on the assignment of the whole function which by implication means that the function remains.
Okay. All right. I'm going. I wanted to raise something. Maybe when the development comes again, maybe this is the answer. What are the question of the state attorney who has really held the situation of this attorney that accumulated lives by using, you know, vulnerable people in terms of litigation and so forth? So is that in your strategy? Do you think that would really save more money than paying for education? That is what in the strategy. The second question, maybe when you talk about the regulation, I want to check the status of people who are in prison. What is their status? Because you can find a person that says this is a type of the father in prison and so forth, and you find that the father is around here in the country doing a lot of things, or even working, you know. So is there any data collection that relates the information that the social development has and what the Department of Correctional Services has? Because there are people who are doing that thing to make sure that they can. The second one is the relation between the social development and home affairs. Forging of death certificate to claim that this is the parent, that this is the father, whereas that is not an issue, you know, to those are there. So maybe when we discuss
I think those are issues, some of those that we begin to see trends of those where attorneys represent non-existing clients. Especially in KZN, but we've launched a small-scale kind of audit, rapid results audit in KZN. Probably in future we should be able to share that. But there are those kind of duplications already, and you know, the kind of use of innocent people who are not even aware that they've been on the database of certain attorneys. So there's litigations, but also there's a secondary layer of fraud and opportunism that is very rife, and it escalates from one province to the other, but KZN is one typical province. But we've launched that assessment or evaluation, and we should be able to provide more light into that too. Thanks, Chair.
Chief Director, do you want to respond to any of the issues,
right? Chair, in our strategy, we dealt with the issue of instances where some attorneys would claim to be representing certain. Now, what we said we needed to do is to say, once we receive the papers, we need to say to them, we need proof that you actually have been authorized to represent these people. but they may still have that proof, but there would be no benefit for the applicant. For example, the attorneys will be in, some attorneys will be interested in the costs, although they know that after they receive the cost order, the beneficiary remains in the same position. The situation has not improved, but we are in the process of saying we need to, you to indicate to you as attorneys that you've got power of attorney, so that you don't claim to represent people who are non-existent. Thank you.
Is the strategy including the involvement of the law? This is conduct that's unprofessional on the part of attorney. That too should be pursued vigorously, because seems like talking to the best of my knowledge is misconduct. Or any other even more gross conduct. We've known of situations with MBA, which is an old problem that social development should have come to mind, where people would go to hospitals and would specialize in getting people on deathbeds and everywhere else to sign big piles of materials and go and initiate and possibly not even pass on the benefits afterwards to the relevant beneficiaries. Yeah, I think it's in partly related to the question that was raised.
Chair, we have indicated that we in our strategy, we will still have to revisit the issue of whether or not some of the matters which were brought before court were brought for legitimately. But our primary intention currently is to try and arrest the current litigation, and once we are done with it, we want to do a validation and go back to all the court records and see whether or not indeed these people are entitled to have brought the matters before court on behalf of the people they claim to be representing. And in that case, in that instance, if you come across such people, you have undertaken that you then have to report them to the law society.
All right. That concludes the litigation issue. Obviously, there won't be time for us to deal with the regulation. It is a date that is still pending. So we'll find time for that. Maybe I can just get a sense, if I could just get a sense, what is the status so far as the process of the regulation is concerned? I understand you are in touch with Treasury and so on. Where are we now?
It's a really number of minor issues related to language formulation, but most of the issues have been addressed between the chief director, Mr. Loselo, as well as the legal services section of the Treasury. I don't also want to give you the false impression, but I can say that they've been in constant contact for the last month and a half, ironing it out. And there is a preliminary draft now, or final draft almost, on its way to the Treasury. And we're at the stage where we agreed that we need to get it. No, Chair, there's been a proposal from the Treasury for prudence's sake that we send it to the state law advisors. I'm told by Mr. Dupria that service can really happen within 2 to 3 weeks, that the state law advisors in Pretoria go through it and dispense of the matter. So we are really working towards end of the May promulgation. You know, it's also going to be the minister's budget vote speech. So there is pressure on us to bring this thing to its conclusion by then.
It's not a special request, it's a part of interest. Some of the things we just said them on media. If we can just have something in one about the issue of the KZN, of Mr. Mabasa, and the closure of the offices of the social development in his land. There's an issue about that. 350,000 beneficiaries, they could not get their own grant. So if we can investigate that one. I think those offices are in Silla, near Grey Town. Okay. And then the second one is around the question of it might be litigation of the MEC in the Eastern Cape.
Mm-hmm.
That is accused of not following the law in terms of giving grants to people and so forth. No, we read these things, and some people are asking as MPs in the social development, we are not informed. Something just where we can know the facts and what we hear from you.
Maybe in conclusion, unless somebody has specific information in that regard, if the department wants to say anything further, the legal section, anything else?
No, Chair, I've got nothing else to say.
All right. I think that from time to time we'll interact with the department and we'll get updates on some of these issues, and if a specific issue arises, obviously we'll raise it for their direct attention or to provide clarity as Mr. Mkongi has requested. But we will identify a possible date amidst this hectic schedule of finalizing the substance book, which is our primary kind of preoccupation right now. We expect some kind of expediency with which those regulations are finalized because of the impact on people's lives that they have. On that note, I wish to thank you very much, the department, for your indulgence. Thank you very much, the stalwart that I have, Ms. Dudley. Most appreciated. I'll have a safe and pleasant weekend. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Affairs.
I don't know.
Yeah.